Welcome back to This Week in the Association with Kevin Lucco and Rob Pannier. Kevin, we begin with the St. Paul Saints, starting with Mark Hamburger and the impressive performance last night against the Wichita Wingnuts.
Yeah, he had it going on last night. Went the distance, gave up just one single run, and the offense got him just enough support. Got him his seventh complete game of the season. And he also broke his own record for most innings pitched in a season, which, of course, he set last year. So it was a good night for Mr. Hamburger.
He reaches 159.1 innings, two starts left. So he really could wind up getting 170, 75, somewhere around there.
Oh, definitely. He's going to raise the bar. I don't know if that means he'll have to try to break that himself next year, or I guess we'll see what the plans are going into next season for Mr. Hamburger. But, yeah, just another fun season, fun guy to watch pitch, and just a real popular guy throughout the entire league.
I've been pretty impressed with 19 decisions total. That's pretty unheard of in this league. Despite Hamburger's performance, we've got to ask ourselves, is there any hope for this team to get into the playoffs at this point?
You're looking at this team's going to have to darn near run the table, and even doing that, it's going to be tough to make up 4.5 games with the teams above them. We've looked at their schedule, and their schedules are also pretty soft, so 4.5 in like 11, 12 games, it's going to be a tough task for the Saints to pull off.
We had a couple of big moments with the team this week. First of all, Brady Shoemaker becomes the third St. Paul Saints player to hit 20 home runs in a season.
Yeah, it was good to see. Good to see Shoemaker back in the lineup. He came back about a week or so ago and found his power touch again. And fans that were lamenting, why didn't we bring back Alonzo Harris? Well, Shoemaker has done a splendid job of filling the veteran role and providing power in the middle of the lineup. And love to see him back in Saints uniform next year, unless he gets signed.
Two guys we did see return, Dan Johnson and Dustin Crenshaw.
Crenshaw was incredible on Monday. It seemed like his fastball had a little more life to it. Seemed like he was throwing it by more batters, where in his prime a couple years ago with the Saints, it was more pitch to contact and just getting batters to ground it or just not make solid contact. But yeah, it just seemed like his fastball was a little more livelier on Monday night.
Yeah, I think Sean said he added about 3 miles per hour in the offseason to it, so it showed.
Oh, definitely.
It showed for sure.
Yeah, combine that with his pinpoint control, that's a heck of a combination.
Dan Johnson returns his first three games of the team. He homers in each one of those games.
Yeah, above that is the veteran influence that Johnson provides. He's been a guy that's played on major league ball clubs that have dealt with going into stretch runs of the season. So he's a huge addition on and off the field. It doesn't sound like he's going to pitch like he did last year, but as we know, plans can always change.
Well, we continue on through the North. We turn to the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who are leading the division with a pretty hefty lead at this point. Probably just, I think, 3 or 4 games away from winning, and their magic number being for the win of the division. We're looking at thinking that this has got to be the team that feels the safest right now as they're moving around the league.
And when you got Zach Neudink as your team security, he's made an impact in the team. What else could you ask for out of Mr. Neudink? When you're playing safe, you're playing relaxed, you play well. I was watching the game last night, and Kramer Snead had shut down the Goldeyes pretty well. There's an at bat. Andrew Sohn had about an 11-pitch at bat, which also included a dropped fly ball in foul territory in right field. Sohn draws a walk out of Snead, and before you know it, hit, and Goldeyes took a lead, and they never looked back.
One guy who's must be feeling really safe is Mikey O'Brien, who's been pitching quite well lately.
Yes, and we were wondering all year where the Mikey O'Brien of last year has been, and now we are starting to see it, and it's coming at a good time for the Goldeyes.
Kevin McGovern wins his 11th game of the season.
Yes, he secured his 11th win last night. I was watching, he made a really good play on a ground ball between the mound and first base, racing towards first and simultaneously scooping the ball and flipping it over to Pleffner for an out. And, you know, you go into the playoffs with McGovern, Rosario, if Edwin Carl's throwing well, and if Mikey O'Brien can keep up his recent success, Rick Forney has to be feeling really good about his squad at this point.
Moving on to Fargo-Moorhead, we turn to Tyler Alexander. You and I earlier in the season had talked about the fact that we weren't seeing the Tyler Alexander that we had seen in previous seasons, but he has really stepped up his game, and that showed last night.
We've seen glimpses of it, but yeah, we were just kind of waiting for it all to come together, and I think even in the second half of the season, we've seen the Tyler Alexander that was an all-star last season. And in the wins column, which we all know my thoughts on wins, but in the wins column, it's finally showing up for Tyler, too, as he got win number 6 last night to go with his 2.23 ERA.
Winds up also setting the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks record for career strikeouts after reaching 149 last night.
And that's saying a lot because they've had some really good pitchers up there. And he broke the late Jake Labor's record, so that was kind of an emotional thing as Labor was a local Fargo product and loved by the community. And Jeff Bittaker pitched there in the first few, 3-4 years of the Redhawks too, and pitched a ton of innings and racked up quite a few strikeouts. So to surpass those two guys, that's a heck of an accomplishment for Mr. Alexander.
We look at that there are four teams currently that have a chance right now at the wild card position. Fargo-Moorhead is one of those. Do we actually look at this situation and think, are they a team that could still get themselves into that playoff run?
I think so. If you look at their schedule, they are home to St. Paul for 3. We don't know what, as we'll get into later, we don't know what St. Paul's going to look like by Saturday, if they're going to be dealing veterans off or not. So they got St. Paul for the weekend, and then they look at here, they're hosting Lincoln, who's been sliding lately, so they can put a streak together, and who knows, Mr. Schlack's done a good job picking up the pieces after the Redhawks relieved Doug Simnick of his duties, so don't count out the Redhawks.
The Sioux Falls Canaries, right now we're looking at a team that is just, I believe, 6 or 7 games below 500 right at this particular moment. And we're asking ourselves, with a run, could this team reach 500?
It's attainable. It's going to take a pretty good streak. And the road ahead looks a little rough as they go to Winnipeg for the weekend. And then they host Gary back at the Birdcage. But I think if you're the Canaries, you make that a goal. And we'll see what they're doing as far as dealing guys. But if they're, most of the roster still intact after Friday night at midnight, we'll see if they can make that a goal to go 9-3. We haven't seen a 500 team in Sioux Falls in quite a while, so it'd be a huge achievement for Mr. Meyer.
We also have to be looking at them. They've been out of the race for quite a while here, so we got to start asking ourselves, are there trade guys on the block here that just we should expect to see moving on?
It's the question I think we went through over last week is they got to identify guys that are probably not going to be back next year and make those guys what basically turn into 10-game rentals. You don't want to completely sacrifice your solid pieces just to get some what-ifs for next year in a trade. So that'd be something that I guess is kind of on a per-player basis as far as trying to figure out do you deal them or not.
We head to the Central Division. The Lincoln Salt Dogs still leading this division, plus still with the top record in the league. I believe a game and a half ahead of the Wichita Wingnuts at this particular moment. Can they hold on to the top record?
I would not count them out for it. They do have a slight cushion over Winnipeg and Wichita at this point, but as we've seen this week against the Railcats, it's been a struggle for them going down the stretch here. Sometimes I think with teams, if they have a healthy lead, they try not to, but you get the intensity kind of gets knocked down a few notches, and then you find yourself dropping some games that you wouldn't be losing if you're on top of your game. I think that's what we're seeing in Lincoln.
I think the tough part for them is going to be the fact that Wichita has 10 games against South Division opponents after leaving St. Paul after tonight's game, going three against Cleburne, three against Texas, and four against Salina to finish out the season. While Lincoln, having Sioux City at home and then heading off to Fargo, their challenge seems to be quite a much bigger one than Wichita's would be to try to get that top record.
Yeah, that's been kind of the theme the whole year with Wichita having the teams in the South to beat up on. I would be really interested to see, you know, we see it in other sports with power ratings, quality of opponents throughout your season, and it's just to see who's really had the toughest schedule and who's kind of had a little easier, not discounting anything Wichita's done, of course.
We looking at the team a little more in-depthly, we look at Tommy Mendoza, who was hitting about 350 just a couple of weeks ago, now down to 293. We know he's been battling some injuries, but is this a concern for the team?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. Is he completely healthy, or is he trying to play through some stuff? And the ball players are that kind where sometimes they're not going to tell you the truth because they don't want to get out of the lineup, and that could be the case with Mendoza right now.
Joe Robinson, Nathaniel Maggio really picking up the slack for the team, both hitting above 300 now. They seem to be a big catalyst in this offense.
Yeah, it seems like it's always been a different guy. I think probably this year in all our shows we've talked about different guys pretty much every week for Lincoln being hot. And right now, yes, those two guys seem to be the ones carrying the offense.
Moving on to the Gary South Shore Railcats. You know, after I think the Rosario trade went on, I think both of us kind of looked at each other and thought, okay, well, I guess they're kind of mailing in the season at that point. How is this team even winning now?
It defies all baseball logic. That's all I can really think of at this point. I think we thought when they were going to Kansas City and then to Lincoln, we thought, well, maybe this is going to be their downfall, but no, it's not happening. They're hanging in there.
You know, we talk a lot about different managers in this league, but I think you really got to look at the job that Craig Taggart's done and think to yourself, this might be one of the very best managers in baseball, period.
You wonder if at some point he could get the interest of a major league team, but who knows, maybe he doesn't want to work up through the minors or anything. Maybe he does like the challenge every year of having a really young team and getting all of them to buy into a system. Maybe that's what Mr. Taggart enjoys, and you know, he's pretty dang good at it.
Yes, he is. The one part of this team that has been really impressive all season long has been the bullpen. It just seems to be getting better. I would expect that if this team is going to win the wild card spot, the bullpen has to be the catalyst making that happen.
Yeah, the pitchers don't seem to be getting them too deep into games, and maybe some of that's by plan too, where they're not expecting them. So yeah, your guys at the end of the game there in the pen have got to be the ones to shut the door down.
Kansas City T-Bones, 3-7 over their last 10 games. What happened to this team?
The pitching's gone down. I think we talked a bit about that last week, and sometimes when that happens, hitters just can't quite pick up the slack, and that's why we've seen 3-7 for the Bones, although they have won their last two now, so maybe Calipietra's got them on track.
Matt Sergi still not pitching, hasn't been available for at least, I think, 9 days now that we've seen him kind of shelved right at this moment. I would think that this is a team that needs to get out there on the open market right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the T-Bones are one of the active ones working the phones tomorrow. Who knows? We don't know what George Samuels is thinking. Him and Calipietra go way back, and I can see those two swinging a trade. I don't know if St. Paul's got a ton to offer for arms, but I think at this point any live arm helps. If you can't improve with your starting, well, boost your bullpen so your starters don't have to do too much.
I think the question to ask right at this point is that the Saints owe two players as part of the Anthony Gallus deal still to Kansas City. Do they come at this particular point?
That could very well be, too.
Moving on to Sioux City, battling an 11-game losing streak right now. You know, the injuries and the signings that they've had to go to affiliate ball, it just seems that it's become too much for this team to overcome now.
They were hanging in it for so long, and we wondered every week how they were doing it. We wondered if they had a wild card chase in them, but I think we've just seen this team wear down enough where they're even healthy now, but I think they're worn out, and they've had a grinder of a schedule, and yeah, 10 losses in a row going into tonight, and not the kind of team record you wanted to break.
No, not at all. You got to look around at their team, see some guys like Jace Ray, and wonder, are these guys on the trading block?
Tyler Ogle, Michael Lang, the closer, P.J. Franceschin, had a solid year. Guys that would have, if they don't plan on coming back to Sioux City next year, could fetch a pretty good haul of prospects for next season. So keep an eye on that tomorrow night.
We move to the South Division with the Wichita Wingnuts. On Tuesday night, they beat the St. Paul Saints to clinch their 7th straight division title. Quite an amazing feat in this league.
Oh, yes, it is. And I was joking about it the other night when they formally clinched the division. They are celebrating like they won a game in late May, but it shows you how long the division's kind of been wrapped up. But really, that is a lot to celebrate, that many division titles in a row, and we'll see if they've got another league championship in them this season. Congrats to the Wingnuts.
Matt Chavez still remains out of the lineup. He's day-to-day at this particular point about where he will be at once the playoffs come around. But the big question I would think related to this team is who winds up getting in that starting rotation, as they have 6 or 7 guys who've earned their spot there.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough decision, but you know, if you got that kind of a decision to make in a year that's lacked so much in pitching, I'd say that's a pretty good problem to have. We saw Tim Brown last night, who was struggling mightily since he got signed. Gave up 3 runs in the first inning, but really settled down after that. Pitched, got 7 innings out of him, so Rolls Jr. has got to be encouraged by that.
The Cleburne Railroaders came out of the All-Star break on fire and have played pretty well this season right now. Cooling off a little bit of late, losers of their last 2, but they are just 8 games under .500. Kind of a surprise that they could be a .500 team at the end of the year.
They could. They've got some wood to chop. There's not much margin for error because they do have 49 losses, but yeah, that's a team that would have to run the table. I guess it's a goal. You make it a goal, but we've seen them play up to the spoiler role, and it's no fluke. The record's been getting better for them.
We've questioned over the last few weeks about Winston Abreu moving, and I think the big discussion of more than anything is, did the Rosario trade make it so that it's incredibly difficult for a team to make a deal because of what Gary got in return?
Yeah, that's a very good point, and I think the same would be. I think you raised the price of poker a bit with that, so we shall see tomorrow night.
The Texas AirHawks, Jared Mortensen, having an incredible year. 8-1 and 10 starts this season. He's not usually one of the guys that you throw out there in the top pitcher discussion, but maybe we need to start looking at that.
Yeah, he's definitely flown under the radar there. He was pitching out of the bullpen for a while, but he's been starting since early July, and every outing he's went out there and given the AirHawks a good chance to win, and it's shown with getting 8 wins, so they got themselves a little diamond in the rough down there.
I think you were even talking about that he's had a quality start almost every outing, too. Is that...
That's kind of rare in this league. This league this year, it's been more of a hitter's league, I think, than I would say the last 7-8 years. You know, you watch games every night, and it just seems to be... Look at the scores, 7-5, 8-7, 9-6... It just hasn't been a lot of low-scoring games.
I think the big question we look at now related to the AirHawks is who could be on the move with this team?
Good question. The guy that took over the closer role down there, Robert Tazen, he was a one-time Winnipeg Goldeye, was released by them last year, but he has gone I think he was signed in July and has become the closer down there, and in like 18 innings has got an ERA of 0.48. So you have to wonder if he could be a chip for somebody at the deadline on Friday night. So keep an eye on that.
Finishing out the league, we move on to the Salinas Stockade. The both of us have to apologize because we learned something new about the team that we didn't realize this week.
Yeah, we forgot to jot it down, but who the new manager is. But
Daniel Aldrich, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, unbeknownst to either of us, we didn't see it until we saw a story that came out in the New York Times that J.D. Drady, as planned, stepped down on August 2nd to be with his family. So Aldrich has done a good job with them. They're playing some decent ball, and it's still attainable for them to get the 20 wins.
Which brings up, do they have four more wins in them this season?
You know, why not? They go to Cleburne this weekend, and as we've seen earlier in the year, Cleburne's had fits with them. So you never know.
Moving on to this week, some big series that coming up for the weekend.
Yes, definitely, and I say that you're looking at, first of all, you're looking at the Saints up in Fargo for three, but the big one's going to be Kansas City at Gary. Gary's back home at the Steelyard, and we'll see what happens in the wild card chase. Could they bury Kansas City with a sweep? But then if they do, is Fargo's still going to be knocking at the door? So I'd say those would be the two series this weekend with huge playoff implications.
The one thing I would look at for St. Paul traveling to Fargo is that both those teams have to be kind of watching, hoping that there's at least a split out of that series. I mean, no better than that. And they need to sweep. St. Paul or Fargo needs to walk away with a sweep out of that.
Yeah, I think we saw that last weekend too, where there's like every game, if the Saints would have won, they end up losing 2 out of 3 to Cleburne. But if they had won all three, with Kansas City and Gary trading the top spot in the wild card, you could only really make up half a game a night. So, but you know, that makes St. Paul being 4.5 out even that more daunting. So,
two other series of interest that go on this weekend. Sioux City travels to Lincoln. Sioux Falls travels to Winnipeg. So we're looking at playoff seating for both those teams. Coming out of the weekend, there are four series that have some playoff implications. What one really stands out for you?
I see a lot of spoiler roles. Sioux Falls has a chance to be a spoiler with Gary coming into town. I see Wichita still needs wins to stay ahead and top record in the league, and well, actually they're trailing Lincoln, but they've got Cleburne coming in. Lincoln goes up to Fargo-Moorhead. Well, Fargo-Moorhead's still in the playoff, or in the wildcard chase, so they're not going to roll over and play dead for the Salt Dogs. So
the biggest series, as you were saying there, Lincoln-Fargo, that seems to be the one that everybody would be watching, especially if this weekend doesn't lock one of these teams out of the wild card race.
Correct, and we'll see where the T-Bones are after this weekend. They go to Sioux City, and we documented their struggles earlier in the show, so that might just be the tonic that T-Bones are needing right now.
Well, Kevin, tell us what's going on with us this week.
Well, I've been keeping up on the playoff chases. I'll be looking to complete my 25 years of St. Paul Saints baseball blog. So I just did 2014 earlier this week, which was a momentous one as it was the last season at Midway Stadium. So keep an eye out for that.
For myself, we have a story up about Zach Fisher and Max Garrett from this past week. We'll have stories coming as the playoffs getting closer. We'll be looking at Levi Scott from Texas this coming weekend, as well as Derek Gordon and Matt Sergi. We'll have stories on coming up next week. And we close it out by telling us about social media out there, Kevin.
Well, follow us at TWITA Baseball on Twitter. We'll keep you up to date as best as we can on stories going on throughout the league, especially when all the trades start coming in. The trades are usually made by Friday at midnight, but then a lot of times we don't hear about them till Saturday afternoon after the deadline. So we'll try our best to keep everybody posted on that as we find out about it ourselves.
Plus the numbers are really rising up. We're excited people are coming out and seeing what's going on out there.
Yes, join in. Give us a read. Give us some feedback. We enjoy hearing from folks.
Absolutely. And tell us anything you have going on. We'd love to hear about it.
Pertaining to baseball. Or actually other things too. I mean, I don't know how much the help will be, but we'll give you a listen if you need an ear.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us on This Week in the Association.